Ever wondered if just staying silent could somehow, like, legally lock you into a contract? Or what happens when a lawyer throws out a bunch of fancy legal terms but doesn't really explain what they mean?
Well, today we're going to find out.
We're taking a deep dive into a case, Odyssey Imaging, LLC v. Cardiology Associates of Johnston, LLC. It's like a masterclass in what to do and definitely what not to do when you're dealing with legal documents, especially, when it comes to counterclaims and affirmative defenses.
In this case, it really boils down to those super basic principles of contract law and how courts handle these disputes. Like, are you actually backing up your arguments with facts and not just, throwing out legal words?
Yeah, exactly. So let's set the scene here. We've got a contract dispute between a medical imaging company called Odyssey and a healthcare practice, Cardiology Associates.
Right.
Their original contract, way back in 2005, was for Odyssey to provide all the equipment and staff for nuclear imaging services to Cardiology Associates. 5-year deal, they extended it, supposed to run until October 2011.
Yeah, that's a pretty standard kind of agreement. You see that a lot in business relationships.
Totally. Yeah. But then things went a little sideways.
I didn't.
So in March 2010, Cardiology Associates tried to end the contract early, gave a 60-day notice. Then in May 2010, they sent Odyssey this demand like, hey, get your equipment out of here by May 24th, or we're going to hit you with a $2,000 per week rental fee, and we're backdating it to May 4th.
Ooh, that's a bold move.
Yeah.
Like trying to impose a retroactive fee, no discussion beforehand.
Yeah, it's a little, aggressive. So Odyssey, they weren't exactly thrilled about this new rental fee idea. They decided to sue Cardiology Associates for breach of contract.
Makes sense. They're basically saying, look, we had a deal, you tried to break it, and now you're trying to make up new rules and fees. We're taking you to court.
Right. So this leads us to the counterclaims. Cardiology Associates comes back swinging with two main points. First, they said that because Odyssey didn't immediately respond to the rental fee demand and didn't pack up and leave right away, they created a new contract, like a unilateral contract, where they basically agreed to those terms by default.
Silence equals acceptance, they're saying.
Right. And second, they threw in an unjust enrichment argument, claiming that Odyssey was unfairly benefiting by, still having their equipment on Cardiology Associates' property after they tried to terminate the agreement.
Interesting.
So let's unpack these counterclaims. Let's start with this new contract idea. What was Cardiology Associates thinking here?
Okay, so their argument, which, spoiler alert, didn't fly in court, was that by staying silent and staying put, Odyssey was basically saying, okay, we agree to your new terms. They were going for a unilateral contract argument. This means one side makes an offer, and the only way to accept it is by doing a specific action. In their mind, Odyssey staying on the property was that action.
Ah, I see. So not saying no meant saying yes, but the court wasn't buying it, right? Why not?
Right. The court shut that down hard. And this gets to the heart of contract law. For a contract to be valid, whether it's this unilateral kind or a regular bilateral one, you need both parties to agree, right? A meeting of the minds. And as the court said very clearly, silence alone, without objective manifestation of assent, won't suffice to create a contract.
Meaning you can't just force someone into a contract by saying, hey, if you don't object, you're agreeing. That would be chaos.
Yeah, it would be a mess. The court also pointed out that Odyssey did actually respond to the demand, not with words, but by filing a lawsuit, right?
To enforce the original contract?
Exactly. That makes it pretty clear that they did not agree to the sudden rental fee. There was no mutual understanding, no agreement on these new terms.
Gotcha. So new contract argument fail? What about their second argument, this unjust enrichment thing? What were they claiming there?
Well, their argument was that Odyssey was unfairly benefiting from leaving their equipment on Cardiology Associates' property after the attempted termination. Basically, they were saying, hey, you're getting free storage out of this.
So they thought Odyssey was getting a sweet deal at their expense.
Pretty much. But again, the court wasn't convinced.
And why was that?
Okay, so this part of the ruling is really important. The court said, sure, unjust enrichment could happen in a case like this. But then they emphasized that Cardiology Associates didn't provide enough specific facts to back up their claim. Like, they didn't say how much space the equipment took up, how long it was there, if it needed special care, or how much Odyssey was actually benefiting from all this.
So just saying Odyssey benefited wasn't good enough. They needed to show exactly how and by how much and why it was unfair for Odyssey to, keep that benefit without paying.
Exactly. The court actually said, how was Odyssey enriched? No details on maintenance costs or value conferred. And that's crucial for an unjust enrichment claim. You have to show that the other side got a benefit, that they knew about it, and it would be unfair for them to keep it for free.
It's not just about saying someone benefited. It's about showing how much and why it was wrong for them to keep that benefit.
Yes. Courts need more than just words. They need evidence, you know, quantifiable proof of the benefit and its unfairness.
Okay, so both counterclaims struck down. Let's move on to the affirmative defenses. I heard they threw a lot of those at Odyssey.
Oh, yeah. 19.
19 affirmative defenses.
19. It seems like they thought that if they just threw enough legal terms at the wall, something would stick.
Wow. So did the court just accept all of them?
Nope, they did not. They actually struck down most of them, 17 out of 19. And this part of the ruling is really important if you want to understand legal procedure. The court pointed out that while affirmative defenses don't have to meet the same, like, super high standard of believability as initial claims, which, by the way, is set by those Supreme Court cases, Twombly and Iqbal, they still have to make sense in the context of the case and give the other side fair notice of what the defense actually is.
Contextually comprehensible. That's a good way to put it.
Right. It's not just about listing a bunch of legal buzzwords. You have to show how those defenses relate to the actual facts of the case. And remember, an affirmative defense is basically saying, even if everything the plaintiff is saying is true, there's this other reason why I shouldn't be held responsible. So you have to give the plaintiff enough information to understand what that other reason is and how it applies to this specific situation.
So give us some examples. Why were some of these defenses struck down? What made them, you know, not contextually comprehensible?
Sure. A lot of them were just too vague. Like, they didn't have any facts to support them. For example, they just threw out failure to mitigate damages and unclean hands without explaining how Odyssey failed to mitigate or what specific unclean hands conduct they were talking about.
Like, you had dirty hands and you didn't clean them up.
Exactly. And the court was like, nope, not good enough. Defenses must be contextually comprehensible, no cryptic form book lists. Basically, they were telling cardiology associates, you got to give Odyssey enough information to understand what you're actually claiming and to be able to respond properly.
So you can't just say failure to mitigate and call it a day. You have to explain what Odyssey should have done to minimize their losses and how not doing that made things worse.
Exactly. It's about being specific, giving details, connecting the dots between legal arguments and actual facts.
And you know what? Some of their defenses weren't even real affirmative defenses.
Oh, really? Like what?
Like failure to state a claim. That's not an affirmative defense. That's just saying the plaintiff's argument is wrong. An affirmative defense means, okay, let's say the plaintiff is right, but here's why I'm still not liable.
Okay, so they went from 19 defenses down to just two. That really shows how important it is to, you know, actually understand what an affirmative defense is and how to use it correctly.
Yeah, don't just throw a bunch of legal spaghetti at the wall and hope something sticks.
Right, right. So what does this all mean for our listeners, whether they're, you know, starting a business, dealing with contracts, or just trying to understand how the legal system works?
Well, what I think is really valuable about this case is that it shows how these sometimes kind of confusing legal rules can have big real-world consequences. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who's, you know, drafting contracts or facing a legal dispute, this case offers some important lessons.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest takeaway here is that you have to be specific. In any legal filing, you have to provide facts to back up your arguments. Vague claims and defenses just aren't going to cut it.
Yeah. You can't just rely on legal jargon. You have to clearly explain the who, what, when, where, and why. Give those details.
And for contract law specifically, this case really reinforces the idea that silence doesn't equal agreement. You need clear proof, you know, actions or words that both parties agree to the terms of a contract. Don't just assume someone's on board because they didn't immediately say no.
Right. Silence isn't some magic yes button in contract law.
So for our listeners, remember, be explicit, get it in writing, and don't rely on assumptions.
And if you ever find yourself on the receiving end of a bunch of vague or unsupported defenses, remember that there are legal tools like Rule 12 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure or similar rules in state courts that can help you challenge those defenses early on. This can save everyone a lot of time and money.
So to sum it all up, the Odyssey Imaging case teaches us that legal filings are about clarity, facts, and getting straight to the point. Silence doesn't mean agreement in contract law, and when you're raising a defense, you have to explain it clearly and back it up with facts.
Don't try to impress the judge with fancy legal terms. Judges are looking for substance, not just form. They need to understand the real story behind your arguments. So whether you're writing a counterclaim or an affirmative defense, be precise, be detailed, and connect those legal arguments to the facts of the case.
You know, this case really makes you think, how often do we, even in our everyday lives, assume we're on the same page with someone, even though we haven't actually communicated clearly?
It's like that awkward moment when someone thinks you're volunteering for something just because you didn't immediately say no.
Right. And that can lead to all sorts of misunderstandings and problems.
It can. So while this case might seem like a very specific legal dispute, it has broader implications for how we communicate and interact with each other. Clear communication is key.
Absolutely. So there you have it, folks, our deep dive into audit damaging. Hopefully this gives you a better understanding of pleading standards, how contracts are formed, and the importance of clear communication, both in legal settings and in your everyday lives. Keep those lessons in mind as you continue to explore the fascinating world of law.
And remember, sometimes silence isn't golden, it's just awkward.
Until next time.
See you then.